Good afternoon. Why don't we go ahead and get started? We're one of these self-introducing groups, self-convening, I guess is the right term. So, and the standard convening rules first is to remind you that there are evaluations online that you can fill out from the kiosk or once you get back to your own home campus, and they encourage everyone to fill out evaluations online. Michael and I encourage you to fill out positive evaluations online, of course. And our session is about 50 minutes. I'm Stephen Conway. I'm the Director of Computing and Information Services, Texas A&M University at Galveston. This is Michael Doak from Lamar University. And what we're going to talk about today is business continuity after Hurricane Ike, the tale of two schools. And basically, we're going to go through the scenario that occurred with Hurricane Ike when it hit the Texas coast from a perspective of about 150 miles apart. The eye went over our campus, and there was significant damage still in Beaumont at Lamar. And so we're going to go through and compare and contrast our two different situations. And for those of us that are a little bit older and remember a previous presidential election, to take off on that, we don't like Ike at all. This is a map of Texas, the middle part of the United States, obviously. And with Beaumont and Galveston notated, it's about 150 miles between the campuses. And Hurricane Ike was a fairly massively storm in diameter, but not necessarily in wind speed. It actually never became a major hurricane. It was right at the top of a Category 2 storm. It was about 2 miles per hour below a major hurricane status. Unfortunately, because of the wide diameter of the storm, it was a Category 4 storm surge. And so a lot of what drove this was a fairly unusual event. And our format for today will pretty much be point counterpoint. We're going to go through each area and briefly go through what each campus did. In this case, both of the campuses carefully monitored, as we do always before storms, the week preceding landfall. On 10 September at 2:30, we decided to evacuate and close the campus at 5 p.m. that day. And by 7:30, all the students had evacuated and departed for College Station. Or wherever they were going, and then a few students, less than a dozen, that didn't have their own transportation, we transported on university vehicles to College Station, Texas.
I'm Michael Doak from Lamar University. As Steve told you, I'm in IT there as well, and we had a similar pattern for evacuation. We left the campus, most of us did, on the 10th of September, and we left behind a small contingent of folks who formed our emergency control center. There were three people from IT services who stayed on campus. They hunkered down with the campus police and our president and a couple other staff members and rode the storm out on campus. Our disaster recovery business continuity site at San Marcos in the San Marcos State University facility was our offsite, and that's where I headed on the 10th.
We are a branch campus of the main campus in College Station. We have about 1,800 students of the total 50,000 A&M University students. And so we relocated our web services and electronic mail to College Station. We usually do this in advance of a storm. We relocated our large training ship, a 500-foot training vessel, across to a pier right out the storm. We opened up a communication center with key people, our communications and marketing person and some of our staff in College Station. And we secured the staff with only police remaining behind and actually not on the campus. They relocated at a hotel on the island with the Galveston Island Police Department.
As I said, the core team stayed there. A very small group of people stayed on campus. They actually used the campus buildings. The president's house had been used in a prior hurricane in Rita as the command center. This time we did it a different way. We had a command center in the library and made sure that there was a place for people to sleep and eat during the whole event. Our local core team helped us take the systems down when the hurricane was upon us, but they kept everything running otherwise. And we tried to keep services running on site in Beaumont as long as possible. while I was off-site ordering replacement equipment in case the worst happened.
In preparing, we tracked and monitored aggregation locations of students, faculty, and staff. We built a small little online database where everybody had to go in and put where they were going, who they were traveling with. Because one of the classic problems has always been parents calling and saying, my son or daughter hasn't called me. Where are they? And so in the past, we'd actually, for 30-some years, done this with pieces of paper in a stack, three copies, one copy in Galveston, one copy in College Station, and one copy with one of our senior VPs. And in this case, we actually had a little access database and distributed it widely. We secured and removed various files, research specimens, cache, equipment, and a variety of things that would have been damaged by a large storm surge, and secured everything we could in place, and then maintained our major form of communication as our campus website and our emergency notification system, which we use through E2 Campus.
One of the things, just parenthetically, that we didn't mention early on, I don't think, but I think it's an important difference between our two sites is that Galveston is an island, which we're right near the coast, but we're not actually on an island. So in some ways, there's unique conditions of being in that situation. We have the fortunate case that we can just hop in a car and go down I-10 to grab our tapes and bring them up to San Marcos. So transportation is a little bit simpler, though it does get pretty congested. And one of the things that happened in Ike, as well as other hurricane events, is that people wait till the last minute to evacuate, and then the highways are overloaded. So we launched our recovery team to grab the backup tapes and go off to San Marcos to be able to restore the data to systems there. The highway system helped us with that. But the rest of us who evacuated other locations had problems getting where we were going because it was just bumper to bumper. A trip that would normally take to San Antonio would normally take 4.5-5 hours from Beaumont is actually a 12 or 14, 15-hour trip. In Rita, it could have taken you probably 24 hours to make that trip. So it's all about timing. To help us plan with that, in the thick of things, we use things like an AT&T conference bridge to do synchronous communications. And for asynchronous communications, we used the Blackboard Connect product. I don't know how many of you have had experience with that, but it worked very well for us. It was originally ConnectEd until it was acquired by Blackboard, and we've been a customer of theirs for several years, back from the ConnectEd days. That served us as our communication tools with our students, faculty, and staff to get out messaging about hurricane events, school closing, reopening, et cetera.
One of the just interesting things with E2 Campus, it's built for small 140-character text messages, of course. At one point, we tried to send a long message and ended up sending 9 different texts to try to get it out to all the information after the storm had hit. Well, of course, if you've ever really tried to send sequential text messages, you can send them sequentially. People don't receive them sequentially. So they got 8, and then they got 2, and then they got 5. And the amount of confusion we were able to create was absolutely phenomenal. Just real briefly about the hurricane itself, on the 13th of September at 2:10 in the morning, Hurricane Ike made landfall in Galveston. It was a Category 2 storm with 110 mile per hour sustained winds. Hurricane force winds extended 115 miles from the center, which is very, very wide for a hurricane. Normal swath for hurricane force winds is about 50 miles for a large hurricane. The maximum storm surge in Port Arthur was 15 feet. That's actually about 60 miles to the east of Galveston. Galveston was about 11 feet. Houston was about 5 feet. And the massive size caused wind damage and storm surge damage for a much broader area than you would normally have. And Mike, talk about your different Lamar campuses.
Well, Port Arthur, where you see the 15-foot storm surge happen, is just a stone's throw away from Beaumont. It's a neighboring town. And Port Arthur is the location of one of the 4 Lamar components that are part of the TSIS system, Texas State University system in Southeast Texas. Port Arthur, Lamar campus, Port Arthur, is a smaller campus. They were fortunate in that the storm storm wall held, but they weren't so fortunate in Bridge City, which is not very far from Port Arthur and Beaumont, and they had extensive flooding in Bridge City. But as with everything else, our campuses, they're not too far spread out, but each one of them had very different impacts. Hurricanes are like that. They are very intense in one area and really hurt in other places that barely touch down at all. So,
on our campus, the standard floor height of the building is 12 feet. The storm surge actually on our campus was 11 foot 6, so debris lines were right at the base of the sills of all the buildings. So we were about a foot from a couple of $100 million in damage, probably. Yep. University of Texas Medical Branch, his typical building was about 6 feet because they were built on the older part of the island much earlier than our campus was, and they destroyed most of the first floors of the whole hospital and university. Looking at business continuity plans, we really developed our business continuity post-Rita. About 12 hours before Hurricane Rita hit the coast in Beaumont, Port Arthur area, it was headed straight for Galveston. So this is what we call significant emotional events. Mm-hmm. And so after that, we spent a lot of time developing our plan. And we activated our plan on Sunday the 14th, our business continuity plan. 75% of Galveston was flooded. Two of our buildings had roof damage, but only one building had minor flooding damage. Access road to the campus was washed out, so you had to walk across the railroad tracks. And our Texas Clipper was able to house our teams on site because it has generators and berthing and messing all on board.
As I said, the impact was different depending upon which site you were at. Our campus, per se, the main Lamar University campus in Beaumont did not flood, although the surrounding community did have some significant low-lying area flooding. The three buildings on campus that got hit hardest were the library, which is the tallest building on campus, quite a target for the hurricane. The Family and Consumer Sciences building, which is right next to my office, sustained some damage. And the Montaigne Center, which is our entertainment complex across the street from the main university campus, had roof damage and damage to some of the windows. They were blown out by the hurricane winds.
When we look at continuity and recovery, we began work on the 15th to relocate students, faculty, and staff to College Station. I'll talk about our plan and when it was developed, but basically it said if our campus was going to be unavailable for 2 weeks, we would relocate to the parent campus in College Station. It wasn't clear when we'd be able to restore services on our campus and in the community, which was our bigger problem. The community flooded much more extensively than our campus, so people's homes were destroyed. Mm-hmm. They couldn't get back onto the island for about a month. We didn't have power for 5 weeks. Those were much bigger issues, actually, than the campus for us. And housing in classroom and laboratory space were the greatest challenges. And we developed some guiding principles, maintain the highest quality of academic excellence, and to make the relocation cost neutral to students, faculty, and staff. So if a student was living in our dorm in Galveston, we relocated them to a dorm in College Station, and the dorm in College Station cost 30% more, we would not charge them the difference. We would pay that some way or another. This is what we call great leaps of faith, because we were ultimately depending that FEMA and or the state legislature would cover any expenses that we were unable to. Now the good news is that's actually occurred. FEMA and the state legislature have been generous with us and actually have covered those. It's a major leap of faith when you spend all your money and all your reserves.
As with Galveston, the damage was not as extensive in Beaumont, but we had the same phenomenon with the community suffering more damage than the university per se. So we did have staff whose homes were damaged, and that's always the concern that people have, obviously, when they evacuate. It's the information from home that people seek, and it's the hardest information sometimes to get. You can find out what's happening in your town, but what's happening on your street, that's harder. What's happening to your house, that's even more specific. So getting information out is really critical. We, on the campus per se, we didn't have a good system shutdown and startup sequence in place. We had a lot of change in IT, a lot of staff turnover, a lot of new systems put in place, and still some legacy systems that needed to be brought down and then brought back up again after the storm passed. So we initiated a planning initiative after Gustav hit us. So Gustav hit, and then just days later, Ike hit. So we were in intense planning mode for system shutdown between Gustav and Ike. And fortunately, it was a success story. We brought everything down successfully and brought it back up again. We did have one issue with some Dell servers, and I got to give Dell their props. They were outstanding. They came through the hurricane, and the system hard drive failed at I think it was 7 o'clock at night, and by 11 they were on campus. And this was when the hurricane was still active. So they did a great job of coming to our aid.
In our case in Galveston, 612 of our 1,777 students, we evacuated on a Wednesday, and 2 weeks later on a Wednesday morning, 91% of our students were in College Station in their seats in classes. And we had faculty and staff that relocated to College Station, we had faculty and staff that stayed in Galveston, we had faculty and staff that commuted back and forth. All of the above occurred simultaneously and sequentially.
By the 24th, we had all of our essential staff back on campus, and on the 25th, classes resumed. We had to adjust the schedule slightly, but we didn't miss any class time. We continued to operate. I was teaching a course that semester, and I made up the work, adjusted my syllabus, and just kept driving on. We completed the semester. I didn't lose any students from my class due to the hurricane, so that was good. Across the campus, we had minimal loss of students from the hurricane. On the 25th, the president called us together, had a bang-up PowerPoint presentation to brief everyone on what had happened, and that went very well. We got right back to work, so it was pretty smooth transition back to work.
In the session I was teaching, I had about 34 students in my session. About 25 relocated to College Station, and about 5 switched to fully online. My course is a hybrid course, and I had given it a few times online for conflicts, when students had conflicts, so I had all the materials available and so on. And students that couldn't relocate because of family, work, or whatever, actually completed my course online, though the bulk of the students actually relocated. The first thing, just a couple of things about business continuity planning that both Mike and I have shared in our experiences is, first is it's a business plan. The business has to have continuity. IT obviously supports that, but and we were talking earlier at lunch about academics, research, service, those are the business of the institution in higher education. Those things are what you have to plan for, along with all the key support things that support that. And I believe, to paraphrase Eisenhower, planning is everything, the plan is nothing. The process of planning is very, very valuable. And then insert your disaster here. I've lived all around the United States when I was in the Coast Guard, and so you just pick a disaster. I haven't been through an F5, I've been through a little one. But you find one of these in all of our areas. No one that I've found is yet immune to Mother Nature, and certainly no one is immune to vandalism, sabotage, or terrorism. To start briefly, in Hurricane Rita, we were planning to evacuate. We had a new CEO that had been on board a couple of months. And one of our VPs, who had been with the school for a number of years, went in and brought the first binder to him and said, here's how we determine if we're going to evacuate or not. And went through all the criteria we used. And our goal is to pull the plug and evacuate our students at least 12 hours in advance of the city so that we get ahead of the wave. The wave in Hurricane Rita was about 26 hours for the 3-hour drive from Galveston to College Station. So as the storm got closer, and it appeared we were going to have to evacuate, they brought him the second binder. And the second binder told us how we evacuate. We tell the students to fill out this form. We tell the staff to do this. We tell students who can't go to College Station to come to this point. We get a bus from College Station. They take them to College Station, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then finally, after the end of that, our new CEO looked at the senior VP who had years of experience and said, where's the third binder? He said, what third binder? And he goes, what do we do if we're hit? So after Hurricane Rita missed us and we sat in College Station and watched Hurricane Rita come straight toward the campus as we relocated our command center there and veer at the last minute, we started planning for the third binder. And we developed a plan that we would then execute 3 years later in Hurricane Ike. And one of the key tenets at the strategic level was if we couldn't restart the campus in 2 weeks, we'd relocate, we would move everybody, and if we would keep our TAMUG students together in classes rather than merging them into existing College Station classes.
We came off of Rita with having suffered Category 4 hurricane damage, major damage in Beaumont. We were fortunate in Rita that, in terms of IT operations, that our power protection did not work during Rita. The irony is that because power protection didn't work, we didn't have electricity flowing into the building, and the building did flood during Rita. So if we had had power, we probably would have had problems with electrical shorts and could have had a fire with devastating consequences. So systems failure was good in that case. We didn't want to rely upon systems failing and being lucky in that way. So with Gustav hitting us in September 1st, we started to put together our plans at that point. My biggest concern was that we had just launched the Banner modules of finance and HR shortly before that, and we are now operating in a two ERP world. We had a half of our ERP system on Banner, the other half on Plus. So we had some Plus hardware at one of our sister schools, but we did not have any Banner hardware. Buying highly available systems to run a multi-campus ERP on is expensive enough. Having to buy replica systems for a remote site is cost prohibitive under most circumstances. But with Gustav in the Gulf, that situation changed, and the cost equation was a little bit different. So we actually were authorized to order the replica hardware and proceeded with doing that after Gustav. So.
Our first priority were for IT during the evacuation, during the stages where you don't know what's happened, you don't know whether you're going to recover or where, was communications. We have duplicate websites that run at College Station. We have duplicate exchange servers that run at College Station with backup exec running, with a double take running between them. Unfortunately, Murphy being Murphy, 2 weeks before the storm, our main exchange server had failed. We relocated the College Station exchange server back to Galveston, brought it up there, and so we had to truck it back in the middle of the night. And we had to move our BlackBerry server. Our CEO is a BlackBerry addict, and so that is a critical service. During Hurricane Rita, the longest 4 hours of my life was sitting there as he looked at his BlackBerry server and said, "It's still not working," for 4 hours. And then we took backup tapes of other systems. We didn't have duplicate systems except really for our website and exchange, our file servers and so on. We did not plan on having them.
Mike. So at Lamar, one of the big things we were concerned about is making sure we had everyone's contact information. Like the highway system, infrastructure for telecommunications is oftentimes vastly over-challenged by having a hurricane hit. People are trying to communicate like they don't normally, and it becomes extremely difficult to get a hold of people. But I carry with me now my hurricane cards, which have the critical staff's multiple contacts, and I keep that in my pocket just in case my BlackBerry stops working, email stops working. Always got to have hard copy and laminated hard copy. Word to the wise. We also had our satellite phone numbers listed on our hard copy. Another thing about satellite phones is they're very expensive, first of all, and they're an expense you take mostly as an insurance policy, and they're also cumbersome to use. And as much as the staff who have them may buck it, you need to convince them to do some training before they attempt to use them. They're not the easiest devices to use. Obviously, I don't want to make it look like Steve and his people are the only ones who have Murphy bite them. Right before the hurricanes, the two in a row, hit Gustav and then Ike, we just had a lapse in our off-site tape courier service, and we had to do the hustle to get our tapes moved. But
it's impossible to understate the value of communications compared to 30 years ago when we didn't have communications in disasters. Cell phones, often the cell channels are so congested that you can't get through with a voice call. However, texting goes through pretty well because it queues up, it takes down a very little bandwidth, and it waits until it can get through. So we learned in Rita that you text during disasters, not call. E2 Campus was our notification, Blackboard Connect website. We had a duplicate website we bring up. The biggest problem with bringing up a duplicate website is the fact that not all the providers follow the refresh cycles on their DNS that they're supposed to. Prior to hurricane season, we set it to 10 minutes to live. So theoretically, if somebody in Atlanta goes to your site, it's been more than 10 minutes and it's not cached, in 10 minutes, it refreshes it. That doesn't happen. From my house in Galveston, it takes 24 hours for Comcast to refresh the site address for our campus. Our two websites, down at the bottom, after one of the state-required notification things, we have a little dash CS on our version in College Station and nothing on our version in Galveston. So when I try from home, I can tell which website I'm looking at physically, and I have carefully tested over time, and there is absolutely no predictable time frame that you will fail over and be accessible from other locations. Now, you can flush DNS at your site and flush it at the main campus if you beg real hard, but you cannot force Comcast to flush their caches all over the United States, or Time Warner or anybody else. Email, of course, and then satellite phones with all the problems that Michael mentioned. We're a little bit separate case. I'll talk about it real briefly. Only as an example of the fact that you've got to plan at a strategic level. We're a branch campus, have the main campus in College Station. Our CEO reports to the provost at the main campus. The president of the main campus is our president. It's actually currently our CEO's interim president of the main campus. We use common systems for student, finance, payroll, content management system, and our library system. And we're about 4% of the student body of A&M. So basically that means in an event like this, we can just fit in. And that's a unique circumstance that most campuses don't have, but that's something we planned on as one of our planning factors. So we transported services and restarted services in College Station and took tapes and restored services at College Station. And in Galveston, my office is responsible for outfitting classrooms. All of our classrooms have computers and LCD projectors. However, at College Station, it's only about half the classes. So our faculty expect to walk in and have them, and walked in and didn't have them. So that created some interesting challenges. Also, there weren't enough free classrooms, so I retrofitted a dining hall as a large lecture hall. We had two churches that were using Sunday school rooms in. And if you've ever seen a class setting in a Sunday school room with four kindergarten preschoolers, it's a really interesting experience. And two empty renovated classrooms that we literally took a truck to Galveston, loaded up tables, chairs of our own, and brought them up and installed them. We brought up a bunch of LCD projectors and computers and so on, and set them up in classrooms where faculty required them, where College Station didn't have them already. First and most important preparation step is step number one. For any disaster, have your letter all ready. Two blank spots, the date and the signature. This is a common experience that Mike and I both have. For the next time, we've invested heavily in VMware for business continuity. There's certainly some efficiencies and effectiveness to running VMware, but those are second and third order for us. It's much easier to do business continuity with a virtualized server where you can, in fact, transport it to another location. I actually bought blades and put them in a financial arrangement contract with College Station, so I have my blades in one of their enclosures, and I rent part of their SAN, and so I have stuff running in both places, and I can move all kinds of services fairly easily. And we virtualized Web Exchange, BlackBerry servers, and basically we're virtualizing all of our servers, both for efficiency, but also for business continuity. And in the aftermath, as we discussed, should we move again? People kept saying, well, if it was in the summer, and it was middle of the summer session, and there's no way we're gonna get in College Station and restore in 2 weeks, so we wouldn't move. And so we finally developed a matrix that said, based on the time of year, what is our response gonna be? Because we found in retrospect, as we talked through it, that all storms aren't created equal, and time of year is one of the differences.
Well, we learned, again, if we didn't already know it, the criticality of our ERP system. We, as I said, ordered replica hardware to put in our offsite location, but we didn't have in place in time for the event a replication system. We are now working on that, and we're partnering with Dell, which is our server provider, and EMC, which provides us with our SAN equipment, to do a full replication of our systems. That's down to the OS level. So it's not merely data replication, it's replicating the operating system, databases, Oracle, Oracle patches. If you've ever worked with an ERP system that runs on Oracle, you know that 200 or 300 Oracle patches might not be an unusual event, and that takes a while to do. So replicating that is much better than having to reinstall it. The application layer, as well as data and user configurations and so forth. So the strategy now, going forward, is to do a full point-to-point replication, which should cut down our time of setting up at the remote site from weeks to hours. So that's a critical transition we're making this year. Our long-term plan would be certainly to use more cloud services. I was at the CIO constituent group meeting, I guess it was yesterday, here at EDUCAUSE, and the question was asked, who's doing ERP in the cloud? And nobody raised their hand. Who's looking at it? A couple of folks raised their hand. We're a long way from having Banner running as software as a service. That's a long way in the future. So we've taken a pretty risk-averse approach with our ERP. We believe that running Oracle in VMware is too risky. It's not a supported configuration from SunGard, and therefore we're going to replicate Oracle at the SAN level, not put it in a VM and do a V2V over the WAN. Just too much risk involved. Sort of like overclocking your hard drive, right? Overclocking your system will void the warranty with Dell. Virtualizing Oracle with VMware will void your warranty with SunGard. So we are doing this as a way of having 100% replication of all of our mission-critical, business-critical services within hours. That's the primary focus right now. We've already entered into an arrangement with Merit. Merit is the Michigan Networking Consortium. It's been around since the early 70s, very mature consortium. And Merit provides Zimbra-based email. A&M, being a large system, hosts it for Steve and his students. We have to provide our own email. The TSA system doesn't provide that. So we have contracted with Merit to provide off-site hosted email for us based upon the Zimbra email platform. And that's for all students, all faculty, and all staff. We're rolling it to all of our constituents over the next couple of months. I've been on it as a pilot user for the last few months, and it's been wonderful. So we had to take our email down last time in Ike. We won't have to do that in the next event because it'll all be running out of Michigan. The other piece that we've learned a lot about, we should have known, but we learned some hard lessons, is the importance of Active Directory. It's one of the necessary evils of the computing world. I'd like to work on an open source LDAP model, but the desktop just isn't there yet, if it ever will be. So we learned a lot of painful lessons about Active Directory and how important that is to have that straight.
A couple of lessons learned. First is our students are great. They're young people who got uprooted with a couple of hours' notice and took their iPods and they took their clothes. They didn't take their books in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
But they did a great job. They showed up at College Station. They were at the desk. We're a fairly small campus. College Station has about 50,000 students. It's the opposite extreme. And in my first class, I looked out across the class and I said, well, who thinks it's still a long ways between two buildings on our campus? So it was a whole different perspective, but they adapted and overcame. They weren't real happy about it, but they overcame. And our faculty and staff just did an amazing job. One of our faculty of 165 full-time and adjunct faculties was unable to continue his load, and one faculty had a health emergency and actually passed away during the evacuation, but two of 165 faculty were unable to continue to teach. Everyone else continued one way or the other to teach. And when you look at your key personnel, flexibility is a critical attribute because you cannot plan at the tactical level in advance, I contend. You can plan at the strategic level and should. Tactical is which classrooms do you go into. You don't know which classrooms are open from season to season, semester to semester at College Station. So you have to have people are going to come in and say, okay, we're going to do it this time. And when somebody says, well, how are we going to do this? They're going to make it up because nobody's ever done it before. And I can't overemphasize the value of strategic planning, but the futility, in my opinion, of tactical planning for this kind of an emergency. And the other thing is, for the IT people, non-critical servers. Oh no, we will never need that server if we evacuate. Immediately become critical. One of the ones that got me was housing. Housing said, oh no, you know, we're housing in Galveston. If we're in College Station, we'll be housing them somewhere else. We don't need that server duplicated, backed up, or whatever. We get to College Station, they said, well, it's going to be revenue neutral. So in order to be revenue neutral, you have to know, does that person live on campus and we're going to give them a room, or do they live off campus where we're going to make some other arrangement? Where is that at? In your housing system that wasn't critical. So, and then, of course, Murphy wins. You cannot plan and prevent. Murphy has a much better planning strategy than any of us do. Things will always go wrong, and it'll always be the most critical part with the longest backlog.
We needed to make a decision as we were moving from Gustav to Ike about the strategy for IT, and we really made that critical decision at that point to move everything to San Marcos. We just made the call, right? There was a lot of talk about moving to Sam Houston, which is just north of Houston, but we wanted to get a little bit further out from Houston, closer to Austin, and so we decided to go in that direction. Some of the tactical lessons learned that Steve refers to, I cannot overstress the importance of local media, local news media. In this age of YouTube and all the other things that drive us to the internet as sort of a global communications mechanism, in these kind of circumstances, it's your local TV station that's your most important source of news, or local radio station. And they're the ones who are on the ground and who actually can report on what's happening street by street. And you know, the high-level picture doesn't matter to you too much when you're trying to figure out what happened to your house and your friends' houses and your school and where your kids go to school. So it's local media. So getting plugged into local media is important. We tend to neglect that. Fortunately, Lamar has a very good relationship with a number of media outlets. Our public relations people are great, and so we had a very good tie-in to them. The other thing that is important tactically is to have a good chain of command. Steve and I are both military veterans. Steve spent a lot more time on active duty than I did. But you learn the importance of chain of command and delineation of responsibilities. It's that between units that where people get killed, and it's between entities within your organization where things get screwed up. So it's real important that you have that in place. You got to know what you have on hand for your physical assets. Power is critical. Do you have enough fuel to keep the campus running? And if, in fact, you don't, then do you have a supply of fuel? How about electrical power? And, Entergy's website was my favorite website for the whole hurricane, trying to figure out when we're going to get power back. And that's critical, both for homes of yourself and your employees, and for the campus. Your relationship with your power company is important, too. Safety and security obviously become different, more complicated issues in this environment. One of the things that we carry with us is a card with a holograph on it that lets us through the police barricades to get back onto campus. And I've given cards to the staff who are going to be first back to campus, make sure they can get on campus as a preparatory measure. Our long-term preparations are probably the ones that, like Steve's campus, are the ones that need the most work. What happens is oftentimes tactical rather than strategic. And of course, your battle damage assessment remains a crucial issue. What are you going to do with all the damage? We're still struggling with insurance claims. We're still, I think, just wrapping up with Rita. I mean, these things for your finance office are nightmares. Long after the facilities are back in shape, the poor folks in finance are struggling with trying to settle all the FEMA money questions and insurance claims, and it just goes on and on for them.
I think we're at 75% of the FEMA claims have been adjudicated. Yeah. I don't know how much money's back, but they still haven't got to 25%. It's been 16 months now.
Yep.
One bad sign, when your electric provider, CenterPoint in our case, comes on TV and says they have 2.5 million customers out of power, that's a bad thing.
Not good.
A few memories. During the middle of the storm on my phone, I got email from the Clipper as the eye of the storm passed over it. We had five of our staff on board tending the lines and so on. And they're talking about standing out in the middle of the calm air and see the stars above them and so on. You know the eye went over you when the eye goes over you. Students lined up in College Station as we tried to re-register them and tell them where we're going to go and get them set up in housing. Millennials have never seen lines. I'm a retired Coast Guard officer. I spent 26 years in the service. Lines are such a wonderful thing for anybody with military background. And our students had never, ever seen lines. You know, we do it online and so on. And so they're all lined up and down the row. And some of them, it was just an adventure. This is something their parents had told them about. And then coming back, the smell. Anybody who came back onto an island, in our case, 75% of the island was covered with water, which had just churned up from the bottom of the Houston Ship Channel, one of the major petrochemical locations in the United States. And then the loss. We were extremely lucky. My family and I, our house had minor damage. One of the people that worked with me had about an 8-foot storm surge through her house. She described it as a blender. And never really thought about the fact that when all the water comes in, all the water goes out fairly rapidly. And they recovered a shoebox full of things after the storm. And then we've got some photos at the end. But go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, our memories from Beaumont are a mixed bag. We, like Steve, were lucky we didn't have any significant damage to our personal property. Had a fence that was knocked over, but it was a tall fence, and they wanted $10,000 to replace it. Damage, until you've dealt with it, damage to property is a funny thing. It's much more expensive than you think it will be to get stuff repaired. And those people on my staff who had damage struggled with it for months afterwards. I had two colleagues, not in IT, but our director of public relations and our head of finance, both lost their homes. They were destroyed, and they ended up living in FEMA trailers for quite a long time. One of the good things I can report about that is that last week, our director of public relations finally got his carpet in to his house that he had to reconstruct. So he's able to live now, what, 18 months later, in a fairly relatively normal way. So if you get hit, it's a long time in recovering. Our on-site team was wonderful. These three guys were heroes in my book, and they really performed Herculean tasks during the whole event and did wonderful work. The town of Beaumont was by no means as hard hit as places like Bridge City, but it did have damage, and people were put out of housing for quite a while in some circumstances.
And just a couple of photos from both situations. Not your normal expectation of damage from a hurricane as the fire. One of our faculty members lived about 3 blocks away, and his house burned also. It was a total loss. This is our campus. This building had about 12 foot, it was just recently, and the water debris line was right at the sill of the door. This is looking at the railroad bridge, which you could still get across. The roadway right adjacent to it was cut off, eroded out. Everybody has their own personal bad, worst feeling picture photo. I'm a retired Coast Guard commander. The boat on the left there is Coast Guard 32 footer, which was excess from the Coast Guard and given to Texas A&M. The logo on the front is the Texas A&M University logo. I've driven that vessel. This is I-45 onto the island. Mm. When you look on TV, or one of your daughters emails you and says, Dad, is that an A&M boat on TV? And you look and see a Coast Guard boat owned by A&M that you've driven in the middle of I-45, that's a bad, just all in all, bad feeling. There were boats everywhere. This is UTMB, the medical branch. Destruction of some of the homes and debris. This is Crystal Beach, which is about a third of the way between Galveston and Beaumont, before to the left and after to the right. Note the two arrows real carefully. So the scope of the damage when you get hit by a hurricane storm surge is phenomenal. The storm surge here was about 14 feet, as near as we can reconstruct. Michael?
As I see those pictures of Crystal Beach, I had just moved to Texas 2 years before, and had never been to Crystal Beach. I drove along that route going down to a conference in Galveston about 3 or 4 weeks before the hurricane. So I saw Crystal Beach in the pre-hurricane state for the first time, right before the hurricane hit. I was fortunate to be able to see it at that time. Beautiful place, and they've really suffered. We in Beaumont, by contrast, we're relatively blessed. The sign you see there is our data center, and that's all the mud flung up from the rain and wind and so forth. This is our incident commander. He's our director of customer service. He was the team lead for the folks on site, John Gennardi. And this is Shree, the head of our security operations center, and he helped us with ensuring that the data center was brought down properly and brought back up. Patrick Stewart is in charge of the data centers now. Coming out of the hurricane, he did so well, we promoted him. And he's there replacing network gear that was damaged. I believe that's Patrick driving one of the little cars, golf carts, around campus to survey the damage right after the storm. He worked very closely with the police department on campus to help do a damage assessment after the storm. And that's the walkway cover right outside of my office. So the one place on campus that is no longer possible to walk between buildings without getting wet in a rainstorm is my office now. So that's the rest of my walkway cover. Interestingly enough, they didn't replace that. That was one of the few places they did not replace the damage. That's the library, and you can see we were hit. I put that slide up there because one of the things we learned from the event was that a lot of library services that students rely upon, even though we have Blackboard hosted, right, and we're moving to a integrated video offsite hosting service for the multimedia components of our courseware, we don't have all of our systems in a replicable format. So there's one person was running the library systems at the time, and she had to leave, and the systems didn't come back up for a very long time. So we have since that event taken the library systems and started to virtualize them inside of our data center. And we will be replicating those services along with the other banner and ERP type services. That's our Montaigne Center. Athletic field there flooded and windows blown out. That's probably the worst of the flooding. In low-lying areas, it was impassable for automobile traffic. And power lines got knocked over. There's still some crooked telephone poles. Some houses, as this one shows, got their windows blown out and trees. I didn't realize how heavily tree-lined the streets would be in Beaumont until I moved there. A lot of trees in southeast Texas, and a lot of them ended up on top of people's houses. And that shows one house that was probably damaged worse than most. Not a common sight in Beaumont, but there was some of that.
Right. Thank you very much for your time and for an opportunity for any questions. One of the things that I want to point out is they had talked about doing sessions on business continuity here, and they tried to find experts on business continuity, and they couldn't. So they found people that were experienced. So our answers are based on experience, not expertise.
Right.
The first thing you do is you get the people out. Safety is your first responsibility in situations like this. I'm a retired Coast Guard commander. I have a whole career of safety first kind of planning and procedures. But I find in academia, it's not automatic. And we've got to back up two steps and think about in the midst of a disaster things like safety and so on. As far as business continuity, the strategic planning has to occur in advance or you're just tactical. You can't do strategic planning afterwards. My theory is there is no such thing as crisis management. There is crisis response, and there is management to prevent crises. But you don't manage a crisis, in my limited experience.
We went through an assessment of several different options when we were looking at hosting the mail. We first looked at doing it ourselves. And taking our existing exchange system and building that out so we'd have disaster recovery and would also have the ability to serve all faculty, students, and staff. That was prohibitively expensive. We were looking at $1 million bill, and there's just no way we could make that investment. So we looked at other big providers. We reached out to Google, we reached out to Microsoft as our first step. And in terms of what kind of transparency Google gave us, it was pretty opaque. I think they've gotten better with time, and will probably get better, even better as time goes on, but their main focus is not higher ed. So we didn't get much transparency even into an SLA, never mind disaster recovery. So we moved on to Microsoft and tried to work with Microsoft as another option. Their response to us, quite candidly, was they weren't ready. So they said, if you wanted to do student, faculty, and staff, we really aren't ready for that. The critical thing is the faculty component, because they and the staff, as opposed to students, require probably more robust services. The other thing that they require is that they know where their data is, right? So we didn't get very far with Microsoft. In terms of Merit was very transparent to us. We are part of, with Merit, we are part of a disaster recovery plan, business continuity plan, that goes throughout the entire state of Michigan. So it's part of their higher ed plan. One of these days we'll be that far in Texas, and we'll be able to do the same thing within our consortium. But our consortium is only a few years old. So the maturity of the Merit network is really important. Just as an example, we've just joined up with Learn to get connectivity, this Lone Star Education and Research Network. And our network has just been turned up. Now we have the bandwidth to be able to do this kind of stuff. But we don't have redundancy. So we don't have a fully redundant network within Learn yet, whereas Merit's had full redundancy for a very long time. So it's part of the Merit statewide plan, and we take advantage of that.
I believe we have time for one more question, if there is one. I was watching a number of pandemic, like I'm sure we all have, webinars, and they were talking about, they had me going really good right up until the point they said, well, everybody will just telecommute, and all the systems will just work, and AT&T will all be at work, and our GigaMan won't go down, and my people will all be at work. And at that point, we've looked real hard at pandemic, and I don't have any really good solutions, because one of the things about most of the disasters of recent time is they have been regional. So 9/11 was in New York, Ike was in Galveston and Beaumont, Katrina was in New Orleans and a good part of Mississippi, but they weren't the whole United States.
Right.
And I think probably either the Great Depression or World War II were the last great event that really hit the whole United States. Mm. And a lot of our contingency plan assumes that FEMA will be able to help us, because one of the criteria almost or inherent situations is you are overwhelmed. FEMA basically plans, and when I did some operations with FEMA, was in the service, is that the federal government's got a lot of stuff, and when someplace gets overwhelmed, we can go help them. Now, it's worked to varying degrees. They did a good job in Ike. That doesn't count for Katrina, but they actually did a pretty good job in Ike. But if you have a pandemic that really hits the whole country and really hits simultaneously, and there's lots of mortality, which we have not had yet, we have a pandemic, we don't have a high mortality pandemic, it's not clear that any of our planning, which depends on regionally being hit and having somebody else that can back you up, will work. And I think that's the biggest challenge I see, is we all of our planning, all of our strategic planning is based on a regional emergency. And that's a major weakness. Thank you very much for coming today. If you have any other questions, the presentation has been uploaded to the EDUCAUSE site. It's got Michael and my contact information. And if you have any other questions, we'll be glad to chat with you afterwards. Thank you very much.
Thank you.